Just King Things bonusode on The Long Walk from 2025. I'm Cameron, and with me as always is Walkin' Michael.
I'm walking here.
It's pretty hard to walk when you got one decorative boot on.
That's true. You can hear me. That's the sound of my walking with my one decorative boot.
Boom, boom, boom. What's up with this poster? I'm just now seeing. Isn't it the poster is just the Devil's Rejects poster? Yes, it is. It's the Devil's Rejects poster.
So it's not just the Devil's Rejects poster. It's also the cover of The Long Walk, the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like the original cover?
Yeah, it is.
Let's see. The Devil's Rejects poster. Theatrical poster is what I need, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also using the Walking Dead font, if I'm not mistaken.
Looks sort of like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just straight up the Devil's Rejects poster. Look at this thing. Hold on. How do I? Google, everyone at home, Google the Devil's Rejects poster. All right, here we go. Blah, 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 blah. Paste it into our chat. Look at that. It is just the Long Walk. That's wild.
Yep.
It's the Long Walk plus the Devil's Rejects.
Yep.
I kind of wish this were The Long Walk plus the Devil's Rejects. I wish that all the people that were signed up were like the scions of a evil, murderous family.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay,
wouldn't it be cool? Like if they were like different, you know, like
yeah.
All around the United States from the most, you know, rural nightmare zones, there's always a Texas Chainsaw Massacre happening somewhere. And they've each had to give up one scion of their family.
I was just like, there's something here. I think we could sell this. Oh, I mean, of course we could sell this. Jesus Christ. But yes, like this a kind of meta slasher, right? The massacre of massacres.
Yes. Right? And so the reason it brings the country together is that we know this is happening everywhere. And what will happen is at the end, your family will be the only one not eliminated by the U.S. government. So there's a little bit of like, we could probably cut back and forth to the families watching on TV, you know, we could spend more money than this movie did. And then also we could cut to, like some people of those families being like, you know what, we're going to take as many of them with us as we can. And that'll be the end, right? Is realizing that the long walk of murderous families, what it's caused is for dozens and hundreds of other murderous families to reveal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You thought there was just one in every state. Guess what, buddy? There's a bunch more. And they're going psycho mode on people who are in vans and, driving down the highway in front of transfer trucks and all kinds of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Carrying large sheets of glass.
That's Final Destination. You know, is that Final Destination 2 where that kid gets squished by that big pane of glass?
That might be 2. I don't have a good memory for them beyond the second one.
Yeah, I mean, did you watch the most recent one?
I haven't, even though multiple people, including you, at this point have told me to. Yeah.
It's got one of the best final shots I've ever seen in a movie.
Okay.
That's not... Like, oh, blah, 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 blah. It really and truly, the last image you see is one of the best things I've ever seen in a film. Top tier stuff.
Great. This is usually a good indicator for the episode that we started by talking about many things that are not really the movie that we watched.
I said this on the mainline episode, and I really do believe this. I am more conflicted about The Long Walk from 2025, J.T. Mulner, no, I'm sorry, Francis Lawrence's J.T. Mulner penned 2025 film, The Long Walk. I'm more conflicted about this than basically anything we've ever done on any show. And the reason for that is sometimes this is the best Stephen King adaptation that's ever been made. And sometimes this is the most dog shit film I've ever seen. And there's nothing in the movie in the middle for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, it went from my brave wife and I looking at each other and rolling our eyes. She kept making the jerk-off motion. And this guy, you know, she's got a strong opinion where she's just making the jerk-off motion in the air.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a movie that... I was watching it on my own. I did not have anyone to demonstrate the jerk off motion to, but I can think of the specific three or four parts where I had the urge to do that, where if someone was watching it with me, I would have looked at them and been like, all right, come on.
Yeah.
Similar to you. Yeah. This is a very complicated movie because it feels like, there's very good stuff in here and there's very bad cringe stuff. Not like the most horrible stuff. I think that's what makes it difficult, is that there's good stuff and then there's just like not good stuff. It's not like the worst stuff. It's just like, oh, this movie came so close to being, I think, really, really good. And then there's just a handful of choices that thwart the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. Can I say the first one?
Okay.
Putting Mark Hamill in the fucking movie.
Okay, yeah.
Mark Hamill is doing... I really would like for Mark Hamill to retire from being somewhere I have to hear or see him. I am tired of hearing about his political opinions.
Mm-hmm. I'm typing this all to him on Blue Sky, by the way, and tagging you right now.
Yeah. Tag me in, and also no, please, no one snitch on me to Mark Hamill. I don't want a million people with a bunch of hashtags and emojis informing me about anything. But like the thing about Mark Hamill is like I think on probably 2/3 of everything I think the guy is right about stuff, but his trajectory changed late in his life to being like, in the same way that George Takei has done this, right, which is like he is a Facebook group. Right. Like as a human being, he exists as a kind of emblem of a certain set of thoughts about the world. And so whenever I encounter him, it's as a prepackaged set of notions. Right. He's not really a person anymore in terms of the way he operates as a media entity. Of course, he's a real human being, but he's like this like small political industrial complex. Right. And again, I agree with the guy on a huge number of things, but it's the. I don't know, simplicity of the thing, the lack of interest, the fact that it's the same message I've been hearing from people who have not been delivering results for my entire adult life, you know, like there's just a lot of the stuff I find very frustrating. And so I kind of thought, okay, Mark Hamill's going to be in the movie. I have not seen Mark Hamill act in 20 years. I mean, I guess I saw him in Rise of Skywalker, but that was like kind of doing a parody of a parody, you know? Like, I like that movie, and I like him in that movie, just to be clear. That's not even judgment, but like...
Wow, you like Rise of Skywalker. We got a live one
here. I'm sorry. Is that... No, The Last Jedi. Last Jedi.
Sorry. I was like... Rise of Skywalker. Just quietly Cameron dropping his most controversial opinion.
Which one is somehow Palpatine Return? That's Rise of Skywalker, right?
Yes, right.
No, that one is good. No, I'm kidding. I saw that one time, and you know what? I think the last time my very brave wife made the jerk-off motion. Might have been during that film. So, no, I didn't care. But he's good in The Last Jedi, doing the, you know, this thing. But again, it's like kind of a parody of a parody, right? Like it's this weird like joke we're supposed to be in on. There's all the like purposeful stealing the thunder of the mythology stuff, all of that, which I found like really refreshing for a franchise that I was not enjoying too much at the time. But I have since just abandoned entirely, despite the fact it was really important to me for a long time. But beyond that, I don't think I've seen him act. I mean, I've heard him be the Joker, but I don't think I've seen him do acting. And here, he's just not up to the task. And he's shot like shit. The direction here is bad.
Yeah. There's something sort of interesting in the performance in that, and this is where things can get tricky, is that you can start attributing to like the beautiful author function, the plans of the creators and the limitations of the project can interfere with each other or overlap with each other in a certain way. That can make me look at what Hamill is doing here and think like, okay, so one thing that is interesting is this is it. Like, there's a way that you can look at the images that his character of the Major like inhabits and be like, okay, this is, on the one hand, clearly a guy who wants us to think he's a badass and he's a military dictator and all this stuff. And on the other hand, he is just so clearly a guy in a suit standing on a piece of pavement, right?
Like on a completely unweathered, like, not new, but not old costume.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing fucking shades the mm-hmm. whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Hamill seemingly has never held a gun before in his life. You know, so there's a real like, all right, I guess this guy's never held a gun.
Right.
The major.
So there's this there's this tension in this movie between like, is this like intentionally trying to get me to see like, oh, OK, these people aren't really that scary. Right. That it's a lot of thunder, a lot of bluster. But really, this is just some dude that everyone is listening to for basically no reason. And he's just a guy standing in the road. Or is this maybe just a cheaply shot film?
Yeah, I mean, so the difference between those two things that you're talking about, and we'll actually talk about the movie in a minute, but I think one of the key indicators for that for me is that I don't think I can work it from that angle, right? Mm-hmm. There are, in this movie, for shooting the major, two shot types,
mm-hmm.
medium close-up and a fairly long, and that's it. That's all we got. Now, is that because they were having issues with the cameras or with lighting outdoors and with like getting fill light going correctly to expose? Don't know. But I can tell you, right, that there's a million ways to generate an affect, right? A feeling toward a character, right? Of being important, not important, whatever. The way that you do that in cinema traditionally is by making intentional images.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a single intentional image in any of the things around the major. I think there are in lots of other places. I think there's some really good, like, action, for the lack of a better word, action direction, action shooting in this movie. But none of it happens around Mark Hamill. And that, to me, also sounds like he's a guy who was on set for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't feel like he was around long enough to capture a wide diversity of setups with him to make it sell. So mostly, for the most part, you're just far away from him, hearing him deliver the most like pancake flat, rah-rah America, bad dystopia writing,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a script issue,
mm-hmm. right?
Like a significant, and so like it's a real compounding effect. Let me talk really briefly about what this movie is. In the United States of America, in the dystopian future past, every state has a lottery. One person from each state is chosen, one man, one boy, is chosen in order to walk in a thing called the long walk. You have to walk 3 miles per hour or over. You get 3 warnings if you fall behind that. At the end of the 3rd warning, you are shot dead. If you try to go off the road, you're shot dead. If you try to steal the gun from a military officer and you kill them with it, you're shot dead, all this kind of stuff. It's the story of a couple guys who make it to the end. Okay, and what about the relationships we held along the way? In the book that we talked about several years ago, I made the pitch that I thought the book was kind of this metaphor for Vietnam. You know, mm-hmm. I took it pretty, and it has all the beats of a Vietnam novel, all these kinds of things. The movie does a lot more work than the book did to give some lore for the fictional world.
Mm-hmm.
So we're after some, much like in the book, we're after some big war. And then there is a implication that we have like a very, because it's America, and we have like a very weak manufacturing-based economy. And so if you win the long walk, you get a bunch of riches, and you get one wish, any wish you want. And so the major presents this idea that watching the long walk on television increases productivity in the country. So it's like this,
uh-huh.
this moral and economic reason for making this happen. And it's just banging us over the head with this incredibly simplistic, pseudo notionally critical of capitalism kind of idea. Now we'll talk about how that actually shakes out in the thing. They walk we meet a bunch of characters. Some of them we like, some of them we don't. They all die one by one. And then at the end, a kind of inverse or opposite, there's a twist ending for people who are familiar with the book. There's a kind of flipped ending for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's the movie.
There we go.
I do like that the most substantial criticism of like the capitalist structure that's levied in this movie is just the Ayn Rand theory of coercion. Like literally the best they can do to critique capitalism is to say out loud the libertarian philosophy around coercion in the market.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best they got.
Yeah. Okay.
And when that started happening, I was like, oh, we're in a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this is for a bit. I was like, okay, this movie has realized that The Long Walk, the book, is a Vietnam novel, and it has just decided to adapt it in that way, right? Like that for a long while, it feels like
it does. Yeah.
Like, what if a ragtag group of diverse young men who you might have seen, like, of a type, they feel like the Lost Boys from the Steven Spielberg Hook.
You know who also kind of feels like the Lost Boys?
Who?
The Goonies.
The Goonies.
You know who also kind of feels like the Goonies?
The Stranger Things kids?
No, the kids from fucking Stand By Me.
The kids from Stand By Me. Yes. Okay.
I mean, we literally get like a multi-ethnic coalition of Stand By Me kids.
Yes.
They're the Four Musketeers.
Yes.
And let me say, like, I've been talking a lot of shit so far. The six or so actors who make up the maybe seven. I'm looking at the lister on IMDb. I guess seven actors who make up our main characters. They're great.
Mm-hmm.
They every scene, every shot I liked in this movie was those people just chit-chatting back and forth with each other and trying to negotiate and step around this big hole in the ground, which is we're not all going to live.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're monologuing about that in single shot,
mm-hmm.
it sucks worse than anything's ever sucked. But when they're just talking and like acting, when these people are allowed to act and do the listening and response of acting, they're really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I really like a big, which is, you know, there's 20 minutes in this movie that I think are just excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say I had extremely high hopes for this movie. It took a while before I was like, okay, this is not going to turn out how maybe I want it to. But the point where I was like, oh, I think that there might be something cool happening here is during the what is essentially like the cold open before the title mm-hmm. drop. Like, what is it? It's like 15 minutes or something. It's like its own short film.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's like setting up the long walk, introducing all the characters, like they start, and it's like very mundane, very down to earth, very grounded. Mm-hmm. And then ends with the first kill, and it's extremely graphic. It's and disturbing, and it's like, yeah, in case you forgot, motherfucker, this is a Stephen King book, The Long Walk.
Yeah.
Everything
up through that is great. Yeah, I'm on board. You got Judy Greer in the movie as mom.
Mm-hmm.
AKA Kitty from Arrested Development.
Yeah. God, that was the feeling of like, look, she played mom in the Halloween movies as well.
She did. She did also play the mom. I forgot. But yeah, she's the middle mom.
Yeah.
In the new Halloween films.
But they like in this movie in particular, like she's a woman who's been through a lot, and so they're making her look rough with the makeup and everything. And I was thinking about how, like, damn, Judy Greer, like, the first thing I think I saw Judy Greer in was a teen movie where she was the protagonist. It was Jawbreaker, which is, like, the midpoint. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the midpoint between Heathers and Mean Girls. She was the protagonist mm-hmm. in that. I'm like, I have been watching this woman since she was a teen movie actor, and now here she is, mom.
Being a mom. Yeah. That's what Jawbreaker is. That's the one where they like fake kidnap that girl and she dies.
Yes. They try to gag her with a big jawbreaker and she chokes on it. And then they have to keep
about
them.
Kind of the aftermath. Yeah. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
haven't seen that long.
Dark.
Yeah. But no, the whole opening. So like the opening is they're driving. She's in the car and this like Studebaker in a Ford Fury. a Plymouth Fury. Sorry. But they're driving and there's kind of going back and forth and you're like, I didn't really know yet. Right. They're talking about the long walk. They're doing setup. I don't need much setup because I'm very familiar with long walk maneuver. But for like a random audience, you know, you got to figure that out. And so you got Judy Greer and Cooper Hoffman playing Garrity. Cooper Hoffman is the son of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching them do it and you're like, damn, these people are acting. Like, acting's happening. The thing where she lets him go and then she's like, no, no, no. And she like chases him down and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like gasping for air. I was like, shit, this is going to be a fucking movie. They're going to hit us over the head with like the bad feelings. And I was like, I'm on board. No wonder people like this movie. It's a bad feelings movie. And then it like takes its foot off the gas for like basically after, is it Curly who gets killed?
Yeah, the first kid who gets shot.
Yeah. So everyone starts walking. They get up. Everyone's wearing like a weird combo of 1950s clothing.
Yeah.
Like Soviet 1950s clothes.
It's the beautiful, worth mentioning, right? The guy who directed this, Francis Lawrence, is the same guy who directed the Hunger Games films. And knowingly, right, feels like a lot of elements there are being repeated with this kind of like, it's the 1970s, but also the future, but also the 1930s.
Yeah. Yep. Depending on where you look.
Yeah.
Sometimes the long walk's been happening on this same road for eternity. Sometimes it's never been here before.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single bit of consistency between those things. So hard to know.
Mm-hmm.
But you have all that. And then, yeah, there's this kind of joviality or whatever of all these people. Here's a real debate that we had, Michael, my very brave wife and I. Are there 50 states or 49 states?
So I didn't go in this direction. My thought was, what is a state?
It's a great question.
Right? Because it's similar. It's like, they're like, oh yeah, all 50 states. And it's like, oh, okay. So what does state mean here? Mm-hmm. But say more about what you and your wife were debating.
Well, I'm just, the last one they call is Richard Harkness,
mm-hmm.
who's number 49.
Yeah.
And I took that to mean there was no number 50.
Huh.
Which is like we lost New York or California, you know, or Alaska.
Oh, bizarre.
I thought maybe it was some fun world
zero. Building. Maybe someone was zero. I don't know.
I think there's number one. They called number one first. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Huh.
I just thought it was neat. It's not, you know, a thing. But it is really funny that the book, you know, not to compare the two too much, but the book really does spend a lot of time being like, and now we're moving to New Hampshire. You know, like it's very patient about the distances and whatever. And here, because I think it was all filmed in Louisiana, is what it looked like to me.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of can't do that. So,
yeah. Well,
but yeah, then they start walking and then that the, you know, this kid gets a leg cramp, which I think is also what happens in the,
yeah,
in the book. And he just gets blasted. It's a great looking effect.
Yeah. You know? Like you see it, like you see his skull open up. You see the bones in there.
Yeah. There's a lot of digital, I think in this movie, very, very few practical effects and overwhelmingly digital replacement effects, but they all look good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like a broken ankle later on, yeah. Digital replacement effect that looks really good. I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's, yeah. And the beginning, as I said, it's specifically set up to like, you know, lull you into that sense of like, oh, the guys are just like talking. They're just getting to know each other. And then like, oh, they are going to get shot. Okay. Hmm. And then they walk. They walk for a good long while, so I guess we might as well talk about like the characters, and then we can describe what happens to them.
Mm-hmm. I want to say a couple things about the production history first.
Oh, actually, okay, yeah, let's do this.
I only know a few, so
okay,
I, you know, a couple things. Number one, I was wrong. I thought this was shot in Louisiana, but it was shot in Winnipeg.
Huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Canada for America, which is interesting. Perhaps they have 49 states.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The film was shot chronologically for some reason. It doesn't make any damn sense to me, but okay. Also, I don't think that's true. There's no citation for this, and I don't know if I believe that's the case. They got Mark Hamill for It's literally impossible for that to be true. So
right.
There's
a flashback in this
movie.
There's
multiple flashbacks. I mean, maybe in some broad sense. I don't know. Maybe to some definition of the word chronological. In that it was shot in time. And like events in history happened one after another, you know? Andre Ovidal. Okay, so we know from Mick Garris from many years ago that there had been scripts for The Long Walk going around Hollywood since like the mid-80s, since the book came out. And people had tried to do it a bunch of different ways, and it never worked out. George Romero was supposed to do it, and then Darabont was supposed to do it after, like way after, like maybe when he was doing The Mist around that time period. Mm-hmm. And it just never got off the ground. Never happened. And that, according to Mick Garris in an interview that I heard like way back, I think it shows up in that book too, is his point was it's impossible to adapt it. Like you run into fundamental filmmaking issues because it's fundamentally not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like not enough happens.
Mm-hmm.
And people can't go and do other stuff because they're on a track.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not, you know, it's not Platoon here. You
right.
Know, you could, the Vietnam story works because there's all kinds of
you did something in Vietnam other than walk in a straight line for 300 right. miles.
Exactly. Right. And so he's like, I don't know how you do it. And I think, in fact, in whatever the interview that I heard from him a few years ago about, I think he actually mentioned the flashback thing. Like you can break it up that way. But fundamentally, it's just really difficult to do. In 2019, apparently, Andre Ovidal was supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know this guy?
He did he do Troll Hunter or something?
Yeah.
And then he ended up doing the, I think he did the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie.
Yep.
That Del Toro
produced. And The Last Voyage of the Demeter, probably yes. the most recent one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't see that.
Oh, he's attached to the adaptation of Bindi and the Ink Machine. We got to shove him into a Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, FNAF.
Yeah.
That's fun. But yeah, he did, he did Troll Hunter, which I think is awesome. I like that movie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, Autopsy Jane Doe, just, you know, a workaday horror guy. And who is someone who I think does have style. And so I kind of wish I'd seen that version of it, but didn't work out. And I think New Line did this, right? Is that the case? This is New Line?
I thought it was Maybe Lionsgate.
Not. It's Lionsgate. Vertigo and Lionsgate. So they did it together. Vertigo recently, let's see what they're like into around this time. So in 2025, Vertigo financed Companion. I didn't see that. Oh, no, I did see that movie. The AI movie.
Uh-huh.
The Zach Cregger produced it. That's great.
Oh, okay.
They co-produced a Minecraft movie. They co-produced Until Dawn.
Huh.
Weapons.
Huh.
And The Long Walk.
Interesting.
In 2024, they co-produced Salem's Lot.
Hmm.
And The Strangers Chapter 1.
Hmm.
They also did FNAF. I'm just going back in time a little bit here. Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
His House.
Hmm.
The Grudge.
Hmm.
Remake thing they did.
Yeah, okay. I didn't see that, but
yeah.
His House was interesting.
You know, I've only ever seen, I had several students over the years do presentations on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen several clips from the film. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're in this zone, right? Like they're making movies other than a Minecraft movie, which mm-hmm. does seem to be kind of far out for these things. They're mostly in the indie horror, but not the elevated horror space.
Right.
They're not an A24.
Right.
And they're not even a Blumhouse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're doing some other thing. They are one of the production companies behind Zach Cregger's Resident Evil movie coming out next year, too. Or this year. It's coming out this fall, I think. And other stuff they've optioned. BioShock.
Oh boy.
Outlast. And The Sims.
Oh, boy. Okay. Mm.
Anyway. They also did the Stand TV show.
Oh.
And Welcome to Derry.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So they're just in the Stephen Kingiverse.
Yes. Know,
as a production company. They got a finger. And obviously, a bunch of these are co-productions, but they're one of the ones who are in these co-productions. So I think maybe that explains some of the stuff going on here. And so I think they just wanted to get it out the door. They had rights to it. People, there was interest in The Long Walk finally. And the screenwriters, it's got J.T. Molnar. And after I finished the movie, I really was like, who wrote this? Because, it wildly oscillates between good and bad in my mind.
Yes, it so much, yes.
he's written three movies, Outlaws and Angels, which I've never heard from. It looks to be like it's J.T. Molnar's directorial debut that stars Chad Michael Murray.
Mm-hmm. It's a Western. Directed,
yep. Strange Darling. Psychological thriller. And then this.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. He's done very little.
Well, so he was in 2005, he was in Tony and Tina's Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Which, do you know what Tony and Tina's Wedding is?
I mean, it was a like an immersive theater thing, right?
Yeah, slash musical too, right?
Yeah.
And it's been all over everywhere, and it's done now. Is that true?
Yes, I believe so.
But it like set up residence in very many mm-hmm. places. So like he's got an interesting kind of arts background.
Yeah.
But
it's like just to provide some clarity for the listener, it was like a sort of like weird dinner theater thing where like the mm-hmm. The idea was like, what if you were at a really riotous Italian family's home during one chaotic evening? So apparently he was acting in that.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in stage production. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Interesting stuff. But he's just like, and not to be critical, but it seems to be just a guy.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so I don't think the screenplay is very inspired, I would say. Mm-hmm. I think the screenplay is mostly a series of direct one-to-one copies of words from the book that shouldn't be copied direct one-to-one in a performance. And then also the most bottom-of-the-barrel dystopia, broad entertainment ideas that have ever been put in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things together give us The Long Walk. So who's walking, Michael?
Okay, so our main character is Garrity, played by Cooper Hoffman. You've already said that he's acting very well here, and I also appreciate him, just in like a general sense, because I saw him in Licorice Pizza, but seeing him here in particular, I was like, I'm so glad that we've got schlub representation, even here in the hyper polished AI, beautified world. We still have an actor who can kind of be like, you look at him and it's like, I relate to him because I also feel like my shirts hang weirdly on me sometimes.
I mean, that was the Philip Seymour Hoffman promise.
Yes.
Right?
No, that is the thing. It was like, you are carrying on your dad's work of giving me someone to look at on the screen and be like, yeah, that's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah, he looks like a real guy. And I really do appreciate that. I think he's a good actor.
Yes.
I didn't see Licorice Pizza, but now I'm more interested in doing it. But he's just doing the thing.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of what you need, right? Like in a movie like this, you just need a guy to do the thing, to kind of hang loose, to be the central character, but not be too much of the central character. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that guy's monologuing and you can watch him trying to remember and reproduce the monologue in real time. And that is not his fault because mm-hmm. he's been given a bad job.
But yeah, no, he's the main character. He does a pretty good job. Mom is Judy Greer. It's been long enough now since we read the book that I don't remember how much of this was invented for the movie. But the movie has this additional kind of plot line where his father was an intellectual dissident who was disappeared by the regime. Another way of saying this is that he has the backstory of Evie from V for Vendetta.
He does, except his dad is the guy from, he's Josh Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
From Kicking and Screaming and...
Yeah.
What do you, like all those, gosh, what's that dude's name? He directed Barcelona. Anyway, it's just really funny to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's that was his backstory. I don't remember if that was in the book, but he's also got this plan where he's decided he's going to win the long walk. And then when he gets to wish for anything, he is, and this is not, this is something we learned later. He tells this to the other characters. He is going to wish, he's going to ask for the carbine that a nearby soldier is holding, and then he's going to use it to assassinate the major.
Yeah.
Which is,
I mean, cool. That's good.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone says that in the book, do they?
No, I believe in the book, it's more just like he joins the long walk because he doesn't know what to do with his life, right?
Yeah, has no future.
Right. So he doesn't really have a particular axe to grind or anything, but that's kind of like what Cooper is doing. And when he shares this, it is when Garrity shares this, it is brought into a kind of debate or dialogue with the second main character, Peter Pete McVries, played by David, I think it, Johnson, because he's from the UK, but he's got the double S in there, which suggests there's some potential Janssen pronunciation.
Yeah. And I mean, many people have said this before I watched the movie. So I was a little bit primed for it, but he carries the whole movie.
Oh yeah. Like,
like the movie wouldn't work.
Yeah.
If David Johnson weren't in this, which is wild because I kind of also feel that way about Alien Romulus.
That yes. Right. Maybe most well-known at this point for being an Alien Romulus and being the entire soul and backbone of that movie, delivering an incredible performance in that movie and a good performance here. I'm glad to see him in something else. I don't think his, the paradox of the film, I think there are some interesting things done with this character and who his character is and like why he and Garrity kind of have the relationship that they do, right? Or kind of have the debate that they do. And I also feel like there are many aspects of the film that just undercut what is otherwise a really interesting character. Particularly, he secretly becomes the protagonist in like the last 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Which is the big change up in the ending where I don't remember how McVries goes out in the book, but it's
the, I was trying to remember this too.
Yeah.
I think it's because something happens to him because he's been eating that raw sirloin the whole time.
I don't remember that at all.
I'll look it up while you talk.
Okay. Just to walk through kind of the whole arc of the movie here. I've ever explained to you what Ray Garrity thinks. McVries, is there, he, and again, the everyone is kind of everyone fits into the Vietnam movie like stereotype. So Garrity is protagonist, McVries is protagonist's best friend who's a little louder and rowdier, right? Makes a sort of more braggadocious comments, and it eventually is worked out that McVries is like a war orphan, right? Like whatever happened to the United States in this weird alternate 1970s, there were a lot of war orphans and he is orphaned. He goes through a lot of really rough situations living with adults who like abuse him. Then he's like living on the streets with other children. And then he's got a scar on his face that someone asks about early on. And he doesn't want to share that, but it, you know, turns out because he's lived this rough life where he's gotten into altercations and things. And he's explaining to Garrity that he joined the long walk because literally it's all he's got. Like he has nothing. He comes from nothing. Winning the long walk is basically the only chance he has in the world of being something other than what he is. And this has made him, his kind of character note in this sense is like he is hope, right? He wants there to be something better. He wants to reach for something better. And then he and Garrity argue because he feels like it's a very stupid thing for Garrity to do what he is planning on doing, because he feels like it is like an abandonment of like, well, you could have something better rather than choosing violence and being a worse person. You could choose something better. Look at me. I come from nothing and I'm not eaten up with bitterness in the way that you are about that. And then eventually at the end, in a twist from the book, Garrity sacrifices himself to push McVries onward. And then McVries wins the long walk, seemingly, and then seems to do what Garrity wanted to do, which is to say to kill the major. But then also by this point, and we'll talk about this later because it's the end of the movie, I guess. But like by this point, it then enters this really bizarre like dream scenario where it's very unclear what literally actually has happened at the end of this movie in a way that is similar to the end of the book where it's unclear like what is really happening versus what is a kind of hallucination when that story starts. But frankly,
yeah, it's really bizarre to me that I've heard from several people like, oh, I really wish they'd done the end of the movie the same way they did the end of the book. I just want to be like, well, they did.
Right.
Like there's right before that, there's a little difference, but it's mostly the same. McVries just sits down and dies.
Okay. Oh, which is kind of like what Garrity does here, except it's more pointedly like Garrity being like, no, I'm stopping and pushing you forward. That's again, we'll talk more about the ending maybe when it's more appropriate after we work through the other characters. That was the thing that I disliked the most about the ending, which is like, okay, so you change the ending in order to give us the same ending. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Who else we got?
We've got Garrett Waring as Stebbins, not Scooter from the Muppets, on record as my face cast for Stebbins is Scooter from the Muppets.
That's right.
Instead, it's this big blonde himbo guy. When they first see him, they call him Superman because he's wearing like an undershirt, and so you can see his biceps. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Oh, look at Superman!" He's also wearing a flat cap again because it's sometimes the 1930s.
It's interesting that they have Superman now that you mention it.
Yeah,
so they got Superman. That's not one of the band techs, Superman.
Oh, that's true, right? Because the things that Garrity says is like they like just got rid of like all literature or something.
Yes, it's just like it's deeply unclear, and in being unclear, unserious, you right. know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't, anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So they got Superman.
Yeah. Stebbins, although, interest in, if you know from the book, Stebbins is the quiet guy who keeps to himself and seems to have some sort of strategy or plan for it all. And he's kind of a nerd, but also kind of scary. Here they have combined that character with a completely different character physically, whose name I don't remember. In the book, he is he's like the big healthy redneck who talks about reading a Donald Duck comic or whatever. Do you remember that? I remember it because you read that part out loud on the episode.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And he like that's the guy. So what happens with him in the book is he's like he's super healthy. He looks like he works on a farm. Everyone's like, oh, he's like got great odds. And then he gets a cold and dies. And so they take Stebbins, they mix him with that character, and they give him he gets a cold and then weakens and then dies. But he also gets the Stebbins revelation of secretly the major's illegitimate son. Although that's given a slightly different twist here where it is suggested that the major is maybe having the major has multiple illegitimate children. That is true, according to the text. The other thing the text seems to be implying is that the major is having many illegitimate children so they grow up and then participate in the long walk.
I really don't get it. I don't. It doesn't make very much sense.
Uh-huh. Because he confesses this.
Well, the other thing going on with the major is that the book, you know, I think we talked about this at the time, the book might kind of imply that the major is a robot.
Yes.
You know, like, there's the thing, and his whole, like, looking like a stock character in this might imply that he's a robot, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I could see that, but then they go out of their way to prove he's not a robot, which right. is disappointing. They're like, he goes and showers,
mm-hmm.
and he sleeps, and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess implicitly he fucks.
Implicitly. But yeah, so that's him. Then there's Art Baker, who is, if you had to describe him, he is the other guy.
Yeah. He's Southern guy.
Yeah. And he's there, played by Tut Nuyet. I don't know how to pronounce that last name necessarily, but tried. And he's fine. Apparently, he had more in a different cut of the movie. Like, his character had a bit more to him. Did you see this?
I mean, he's got a lot in this cut of the movie. I think in my hierarchy of, like, who am I interested in hearing about, he's right there at the top. He's a cool, like, he's got religion, you know what I mean?
Right, he's the religious one, yeah.
He's got a grandma. Mm-hmm. He's got a nickname. IMDb says he has a nickname, One Take Tut.
Huh.
He gets it right every
time.
He's
just good, okay. Good job, man.
He was in The Witcher Blood Origin.
Huh.
I didn't watch it. More than 1,000 years before the events of The Witcher, seven outcasts in the elven world joined forces in a quest against an all-powerful empire. Oh, of course they were. Of course they're in a quest against an all-powerful empire.
Who
wouldn't be The Witcher without that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's just kind of like a sort of supporting character, someone to bounce things off of, but not like the bigger personality. His personality is like, he's like from the South and religious.
I mean, they're kind of hitting him with the Bubba a little bit.
A little bit.
Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Not the exact same tone, but this like simple guy from the South, he's got religion and that's all he needs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these people are playing stock characters.
Right.
You know, that's part of the difficulty. That's part of the genre constraint, but it's also the kind of lack of imagination of the screenplay, I think, is that everywhere that this movie can go to give you stock, whatever it is, like, of course it's 1984 because it's a dystopia, Michael. So like, I'll just think about like dystopia stuff that's happened. Of course, these characters are all these different, weird United States stereotypes.
Uh huh.
Because that's what this kind of thing is like. We got the kid from New York.
Yes,
he's coming in.
That's a. Oh wait, no, we're skipping someone. In order to get to him, I'm going to hold him off because it's a good pairing because we have a Southern simpleton Bubba kind of thing with Art. Mm-hmm. But then there's also Gary Barkovich, who is the asshole, but he is also from the South. Right. He's the like white redneck stereotype, like the untrustworthy white redneck because he.
I think he's like the Oklahoma guy.
Yes. Right.
You know, so not quite like the Southern accent, but not Southern, just an asshole.
Right. And he has a moment at the beginning where he tries to like have a kind of like conviviality with the other kids. And they sort of his moment falls flat. Right. He has that. He tries to like insert himself into a conversation and it doesn't work out. And then he spends the rest of the thing like being confrontational and pissy and hateful because that's easier than trying to be likable and failing. He also says a lot of loaded things about McVries, and then it's also essentially about Garrity, because the other thing from the book that is there subtextually and is also part of the like Vietnam story is the relationship between McVries and Garrity that kind of in the homosocial aspect takes on some romantic connotations, and it is all but explicitly stated in this movie that McVries is gay. And this is something that Barkovich like keys into. And then by the end, McVries and Garrity are saying that they love each other.
Yeah.
So,
but they're brothers, Michael.
But they're brothers.
I never had a brother before, but now I have a brother who I love.
So that's Barkovich. But then, yes, we've got,
scene, affirm the thing you're talking about, right? The scene where he's like, I think it's Cooper who's like, Pete, you got a lady back home? And Pete looks directly in the eye and goes, no, I don't.
Yep. Right. And this like very pointedly, like, I do not have a lady at home.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those.
Yeah.
All right.
And so then we've got Ben Wang as Hank Olsen, a loudmouth kid from, I guess, New York City.
Something maybe from like Philadelphia, you know, maybe. He's like Northeastern kid.
Yes.
This kid rules.
Oh, he's
I keep saying kid. This is an adult man, but yeah. He's so fucking good.
This is the kind of role that you dream of playing when you are a young person watching movies. You're like, I want to be the kid who is like, who will not shut up and has a really like rough accent and is swearing all the time.
And he's like, at one point, right? And like he gets this kind of like catatonic state thing going on later too. Like he's really going through it toward the end. And like, so he gets to play both ranges, which is mm-hmm. cool. And like, I'm watching the movie where you got people in here who can't do both things and he's doing both things. So shout him out for that. Mm-hmm. But the like the next piece of that is that where he's like, you know what I'm gonna wish for? 10 naked ladies. Yes. And they're like, well, you know, you could with all the money they're gonna give you, you could just pay for 10 naked ladies. Like it's not the same thing as 10 naked ladies. You know, paying for the thing. And then it's again, it's a really great moment where like they've clearly been given a setup and just told to play through it. And so it feels like naturalistic dialogue mm-hmm. as opposed to the monologues, which are really overwritten. And there's a lot of text from the book that just doesn't belong coming out of the mouths of these people. So it's really playful feeling. And then he's like, well, you know, somewhere along the line, if those 10 naked ladies show up, someone had to pay those 10 naked ladies. And there's the world's longest pause. And he goes, you know, I didn't think about that. Yeah. And it's just played perfectly. Like I think he has a really hard job where he's got to hit a lot of different parameters and he hits them all perfectly. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Then we've got
he's in David Wayne's new movie. Do you know about this?
No.
Gail Daughtry in the Celebrity Sex Pass or Celebrity Sex Pass.
He would be so good in a David Wayne movie.
When her fiance uses their celebrity pass agreement, Midwest bride Gail Daughtry travels to Hollywood seeking revenge by pursuing her own celebrity encounter.
Oh, that's good.
It is. I think it's doing film festivals right now. But okay. Yeah, it's got directed by David Wayne. Kim Marino co-wrote it with Wayne. And it stars John Hamm, Zoe Deutsch, John Slattery, our good friend Richard Kind.
Woo!
Tom Lennon, Ken Marino,
Joe Lotrubio.
Yeah. Just lots of great stuff. Fred Melamed's in it for some reason.
Awesome. Weird Al Yankovic as himself. Jennifer Aniston.
I'm ready for it. Yeah. But it's apparently, I think it was just at maybe Sundance this year or something like that.
Yeah, it looks like it.
People liked it. So,
yeah.
I don't care. You know, I got to be honest. I don't care if people like it. I'll like it.
Yeah.
You ever see They Came Together?
Yes.
There's a bit in that movie where my very brave wife was like, you can never make me watch a movie again. You know, comedy film.
Was it a Christopher Maloney's costume hijinks? Was that the movie where that happens?
I don't. You got to say more about that.
Oh, he like he's like dressed as like a dinosaur or something.
No.
Okay.
No, it's the scene where they were saying, it's with the bartender. You mm-hmm. can say that again. And they just play the same scene like 9 times in a row.
It's okay. I didn't know if it was that or the scene where Christopher Maloney like shits himself in a dinosaur costume.
I don't think she made it that far.
Okay.
If people haven't seen it. So like they, Wet Hot American Summer, which people I think are generally very familiar with. Mm-hmm. Wet Hot American Summer is these people making a kind of composite summer camp film from the 70s and 80s.
Right. It's like genre. Not quite a parody.
Yeah. So it's playing with all the tools.
Yes, you know? Right.
Almost like a National Lampoon, but like accelerated.
Yeah.
And They Came Together is that same group of people doing the same thing. Not quite a parody, but this kind of acceleration using all the tools, but for the early 2000s rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
Molly owns a quaint little sweet shop. Joel works for a gigantic candy company threatening to shut her down. How they meet, fall in love, break up, and get back together is hilariously recounted in this rom-com spoof. The IMDb text.
Great.
I forgot that Jason Mantzoukas is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Keenan's in this movie.
Of course. What is he not in?
My House Right Now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's busy filming SNL. Oh, wait, no, he left That's SNL, right. didn't he?
No, I think he's on there forever.
Still? Okay.
We got any other people to talk about? Any other walkers?
Oh, hold on. Apparently, apparently, what's his name? Who's the director of this? Francis Lawrence. Apparently, Francis Lawrence liked Ben Wang so much that he's brought him back for The Hunger Games, Sunrise on the Reaping.
Cool.
Huh, interesting. So there's like, those are kind of the major characters, and then everyone else is rather supporting. There's a guy named Harkness who is interviewing everyone because he wants to write a book about the Long Walk. This is also from the book. I remember this guy. He gets the, what you mentioned, the like broken ankle, like effect that is just like horrible.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And he's got to like walk on it for however long. Ugh. Joshua Ojik as Kali Parker, who is a Native American and is kind of the loner of the group, right? He's always kind of like walking a little bit ahead of them, but he goes out. Is this how it works? He's the one who then eventually like just rushes one of the guards and grabs the gun and shoots them. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It okay. is. And then he gets blasted in the stomach. A lot of people get shot in the stomach.
Yeah.
In this movie. You either get shot in the face or the stomach in the Long Walkerverse. That's it. Those are your two options. But there's a really weird thing that happens when he dies. Uh-huh. Where he does a kind of, like, I don't know, war ceremony kind of thing.
Yes.
And it would be really powerful in literally any other movie.
Yeah. It's one of those things that feels like a little in this particular moment.
Yeah, it feels like there's a Native character, and so they need to do Native stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it feels, like a word I've used already, but it feels unserious.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that's an interesting kind of, like, that's a thing that if you thought about it more, and made that any part of the movie or maybe anyone's ethnic identity matter yes. at all in any case before this, right? It wants to have its cake and eat its too, in the sense of it wants to have like the post-apocalyptic dystopia where like racial categorization just goes away. People have different skin colors, but nothing else exists.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, they're constantly calling, Barkovich is constantly calling these people gay. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that guy, that character, he'd be using the N-word.
Yes.
Like, let's be real.
There are moments where he is saying gay and you can tell that character means the N-word.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And so, like, it feels really unearned, I guess, is the thing. Yeah. And it's a powerful scene. And, like, Joshua Ojik is the person doing this. And he's great. In terms of my, like, hierarchy of performances in the film, I would say Ben Wang at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Probably David Johnson number two, and then Joshua Ojik number three. Like I kind of wish, could we have paired the whole movie down to those three guys?
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, no. And as you're saying, like his death is one of those things where you see it and you're like, okay, I can picture the person who like walks in from the edge of the frame and turns to look at me and says, "Doesn't this say something about America?" Right. This like, yeah. right. Like this Native man, like giving like this sort of like ceremonial song while he's being shot in the street by soldiers. And it's like, yeah, I think it could say something about America. I wish anything like around it had been like built up for us to say it in a way that didn't feel so weird.
Well, I think that there's a lot of ink spilled about young people having no attention span.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Everything's TikTok these days. Everything's 90-second videos, 2-minute video, blah, 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 blah. There's no generation that is more consumed with creating contextless, clippable information than the Gen Xers.
Mm.
Like, everyone who I'm living in their media world right now is a Gen Xer financed by a boomer making things that are images unhooked in time and space from one another that just seem to appear one after another. Like, that's how I feel like mini movies are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is why, like, I'm having a hard time with like cinema, in the age we live in, because so much of it just feels like the continuity machine is broken. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing where like so little effort could be expended to give a contextualization to how these people exist in the world. Have them chit-chatting a little bit, right? Having them be like, he's like, I'm from Oklahoma. Oh, you're from Oklahoma? What about the bomb?
Right.
You know, I heard Freedom Radio said that, you know, Arkansas was off the map.
Right.
Now everything's fine. You're right. There's just like really basic. If you're going to have a movie that's mostly people talking,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's people talking about big ideas with no application to any human being's life.
Yes.
And you could have a lot of talk about, you could make it, you could write it theatrically, mm-hmm. where it's a lot of two-person conversations where they're intensely talking about each other's existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that would not make a great genre film. I get why it doesn't happen. But it would make a better movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that the people that made this are overwhelmingly people who enjoy genre film,
mm-hmm.
but don't really care about making a good movie. And the best genre films do both, right? We were just talking earlier about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's a movie where when people are talking, they're talking about their personal relationships almost exclusively, unless they're talking about a guy they picked up who was stabbing people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interpersonal stuff in that movie, and it fleshes out into this, like, you know, nightmare zone thing. But hell, and we talked about what last year we talked in a couple episodes about In a Violent Nature.
Mm-hmm.
That's a movie that has multiple conversations like that that happen off screen that are just people chatting.
Oh,
and you only hear it. I mean, maybe you can hear if your sound system's really good or you're wearing headphones. I only saw it because of subtitles. And even it has those kinds of conversations. So there's a level of lack of care in this movie that is really disappointing to me. And I'm not meaning to belabor the point, but you can feel it in each scene. Each moment of significance really makes the rest of the movie feel pretty hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to the cinematography. That scene is shot really, really well. The wide shot where he mm-hmm. gets shot in the stomach and he shoots the soldier, all that stuff. That action photography is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the zoom in on him for all that close-up work is really great. It's a high point of the film for sure. That's robbed of a lot of significance, I think.
Yeah. But I think those are all the major characters, right? We have the major, Mark Hamill. We already talked about that. And then we have Judy Greer's mom and then dad who appears in one flashback scene. There's some other walkers who appear who have names, mm-hmm. But they're kind of incidental characters who are there for other things to happen mostly.
Mm-hmm. The fifth business, as it were.
Yes, exactly. Like Curly, who's the first kid who gets shot, right? He's that person. Like, his defining characteristic is that he looks too young.
Yeah, because he is, right?
Yes, he's like lied about his age.
Yeah, and that's great. That's actually because that happens in that opening you were talking about. And that's where I was like, this is going to be a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this little moment where they're kind of talking back and forth. And there's this idea that they... like, you know, the main characters, they are adults who made a decision and they're mm-hmm. going to die. And they know that, but they've made a decision. They're young adults, but they're adults. And they look at him and to us, right? Like people watching, you're like, these people, I mean, he does look younger than they are, but like, they've all made the same choice. What's the difference between a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old doing it, you know, in some sort of big cosmic way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they all feel offended by it, right? They're like, you can't be a day over 16.
Yeah.
I like, there's some, you know, there's some stuff. Yeah. Rank is in here.
Yeah. The kid who's like a little standoffish, a little bit of an outsider, who is the one that Barkovich decides he's going to pick on to feel better, and then he ends up getting him killed.
Yeah, because the kid falls down, right?
Yeah, and then they run him over with the tank.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they don't run him over the tank. He just gets shot.
Oh, wait.
The person who gets run over the tank is the first one who goes for a gun.
That's right.
Okay. I watched it like less than 12 hours ago.
Okay.
But yeah, those are in, I mean, I think there are only like three, let's say, notable deaths, you know, outside of our main character cohort. Mm-hmm. And those are the three, right? So Curly, mm-hmm. Rank, and then whoever it was who gets run over with the tank.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess there's the other one where the kid runs away. He runs like into that pie shop.
Oh yeah, and they shoot him as he's running off. And then there's then there's another kid who like has a seizure or something and just falls on the ground. Maybe he's the one who gets run over.
It's the first guy who goes for the gun.
Okay,
gets run over. I'm pretty sure he tries to climb on the tank.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, they walk and they have conversations, and sometimes they are interesting and sometimes they could be done better. There's a couple things here in like this midpoint.
I think those things in particular are almost perfectly conform one-to-one to the Just King Things rule of adaptation, which is every time it's language I can recognize from the book, the monologue sucks so bad. Yeah. And every time these people are just talking about their actual conditions and relationships, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like the long walk has really proved to me, please stop. Take the master's words are not good on film. Even the movies he writes, the master's words are not good. His ideas are good. Just take the ideas.
I mean, and also resist your urge to write your own monologue, because I think that's what happens with Garrity, where we get the one flashback, or rather we get like a hint of the flashback of his mother singing, and he's like, my mother never sings anymore. And then we flash back to her singing again, and it's the night that his father was taken and killed by the major in the street in front of his house. Which is, this is normally not the thing that I like hammer on. It's not my inclination. But it does just, again, raise some questions about what is actually happening in this fucking world.
Yeah.
Where the fascist president showed up personally to your house to shoot your dad in the head. And your dad was like a fucking like car mechanic whose crime was reading Thomas Hardy novels.
Yeah, he's reading Mark Twain.
Right.
Like getting blasted by the government. Yeah, I mean, and like literally outside, what I really like about that too is that, so they go outside, right? There's like a little house, little lawn, and then we get the reverse. So we see the street, right? And it's dad crouching in the street, Mark Hamill in front of him, and, you know, tank or troops behind him. And then behind them is a CGI wall.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you're like, why are we built? What is that? Like, what happened?
Yeah.
We're built, like, and it's just, again, like, and I'm really not trying to belabor the point, but there, it really demonstrates the amount of just notional care that it takes to go from, this is the most generic dystopia that will not bring me into this at all, to, this is a real-ish world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you just give me the concrete wall with the dad being shot, you might as well just not have that in the movie.
So my exact thought about that whole scene was like, this should have been a monologue. We should not see this, right?
Yeah, I agree.
This should have been in line with the other stories. Like, so later, I think it's after this, that it's David Johnson, McVries gives his speech about like what his life was like. And that's just fully him, right? That is him telling a story and acting. And I was like, yeah, this should have been that flashback. Like, this should have been every kid gets his, like, telling his story, and that's his chance to act. Like, that's how this should have worked. I think at least partly because it also, just what I think, I don't know, this, some meaningless stuff here, but thinking about, like, what a camera in a movie shows you, right? What is the camera allowed to see? What are the parts of the world the camera is allowed to go into? And so it is weird to me in a I don't know, hoity-toity formal sense for some reason, that this is a movie where the camera is showing us the world, but it can show us Garrity's past and his memories of the past, but it can't show us anyone else's memories. But then also Garrity stops being the main character. In the last seven
minutes. All just in service of the fake out.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's in service of the twist ending. And it's, we talked about in the Mainline episode that I think Revival is a book you can read twice knowing the ending, even though it doesn't have a twist ending, but it does have like a real swerve. Mm-hmm. You know, it's doing something different at the very end. And I think it's still just as fun. Like, because the end hits hard, I think, to my opinion. The end hits hard no matter if you know you're going there or not, because of the kind of context it's in. I do not think the end of this movie hits hard.
Right.
Even if you know about it, you know?
Right. Because then, we get into... So there's another comparison point here, which that I want to bring up, which I think is maybe... You may feel differently, but I think it's maybe the most notable scene through much of like the middle chunk, which is that point when it's like their first overnight and they hit that that hill, that really steep hill, and it becomes just a fucking, I mean, they figured out how to do a Vietnam battle scene in a Vietnam movie where Vietnam doesn't exist.
Yeah, just by it's not pit yaw, just by using the yaw of the camera.
Yeah.
Right. We're just gonna barrel roll it left and right in order to demonstrate violence is occurring.
Yep. Yeah, and so there's this to set it up a little bit more, as I already said, there's their first overnight, there's the scene that happens. They're like getting tired, people are starting to use the thing. They hit the hill. It's very, very steep. And suddenly a lot of the, you know, there's like 50 guys running or walking, and they've been walking all day. Now they've hit this hill and they can't keep up the pace. And just suddenly the like troops following them, it's just like warning after warning after warning. And there are shots being fired and you're seeing the guys go down because they can't keep it up. And so some of the other guys are running, but then they're tripping. And this is where the one guy breaks his ankle, because he's like in such a panic, he like rolls his ankle and breaks it. And you're just seeing all of these characters in like the side of the shot being like mowed down. And it feels like a dream sequence, right? It very fluidly moves into, like, you can't tell if Garrity is dreaming this. And it's just after he's had a moment where McVries and he were talking, and then he kind of like pushes off from McVries because McVries gets a little too friendly. And then it feels like we've entered into a dream, and then the sequence ends when he like, McVries comes up beside him again, and then they're like walking together. And for the next, again, like 5 or 10 minutes of the movie, it is unclear, at least it was unclear to me, to what degree any of the stuff we just saw actually happened and how much of it might have been a hallucination that he was having due to sleep deprivation. And then you slowly figure out, like, oh no, all those people like actually just like ate shit last night. Like all those people are
dead. I thought
that
was good.
I thought it was great.
I thought it was great. I don't like the way it's shot. But like storytelling wise, I thought it was great. But
yes.
No notes.
Right.
That was one of the high points of the film. I just didn't. I mean, it's the same issues that this guy, whatever his name is, Francis, whatever. Lawrence. Have you seen the Hunger Games films?
I have, but not for a while.
I mean, they have the same issues, which is just like, sometimes my man will just like wiggle a camera around and that's supposed to be action.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
he also directed, people might know this guy, he directed Constantine and I Am Legend too. And like, I think Constantine's pretty solid. That movie went from like everyone hated and I thought it was pretty good to now everyone seems to love it. And I still think it's pretty good. You know, like,
yes.
I guess I'm off model, whatever the normal assumptions are about Constantine are, because I just think it's fine.
Like, the Constantine affection index.
Yes, that's right. And I'm always at the perfect median on it. I bought it for $5 at Blockbuster. When Blockbuster existed on DVD, I still have my $5 Blockbuster copy of it. And I watch it about once every 5 years. And I go, that movie's pretty good. It's great. But I don't think he's a particularly inspired director. And the person who did cinematography for this, Joe Willems, I did look him up, and he mostly has worked with this guy, but his first movie he was the cinematographer for was Hard Candy.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that an interesting thing?
Huh. Yeah, dude, it's like, oh, and 30 Days of Night. Okay.
Oh, yeah, in London. You ever see London?
No.
Okay, so, all right, let me give a pitch on London. You ready for this one? There, Jessica Biel plays a woman named London that Chris Evans is in love with.
Okay.
What if you did a Rules of Attraction? Okay.
Oh, okay.
But the whole movie, like all the Rules of Attraction parts of all these, like, you know, workaday stories of people's lives and all that kind of stuff, right? Interleaving with one another. What if they're mostly just told in monologue by Chris Evans locked in a bathroom with Jason Statham doing cocaine?
Wow.
That's the movie.
That's interesting.
And then basically the movie's just people, he's like barricaded himself in the bathroom. I think maybe it's her birthday party and it's his ex-girlfriend, something like that. It's been a long time since I've seen it. And it's just people keep coming in the bathroom and like, there'll be like a little story vignette and they'll tell stories that end about like, I remembered this thing, you remembered that thing, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then they leave and new people come in. But it's mostly Chris Evans and Jason Statham. Jason Statham tells a long story about like S&M getting stepped on by a lady in heels kind of stuff, which is very funny to think about coming out of Jason Statham's mouth in 2005. I don't know if I can recommend the movie necessarily, but it's pretty entertaining in the way that like 100 Cigarettes or Rules of Attraction or Kicking and Screaming that we talked about earlier. These stories that are just about like disaffected people talking to one another. And you know what this movie could have used?
Some disaffected people talking to one another.
They were already disaffected. They should just let them talk to each other more. Monologue.
Okay. That's where I was confused. Chit-chat. I was like, they are disaffected. Okay. Yeah,
they are disaffected. That's true. Was also the DP for His House that we talked about just a little while ago.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. There you go.
But yeah, so I think that that weird like Midnight Massacre scene is important somewhat because it is like the biggest setup for then what happens at the end, which is everyone else has died or whatever. And it's just McVries and Garrity, and Garrity tells McVries to go on and like complete his work or whatever. And then he gets shot. Then McVries. So the other thing, when we're thinking about budgets and whatnot, very conveniently, they don't allow people to spectate the long walk until the very end. And then even then,
there's nine people in this movie,
right? And even then, you don't see them very much because the long walk is ending at night in the dark on a city street somewhere, and everyone's confused. So the camera's always looking in weird directions, but the long walk finishes. You're like, we're stuck on McVries. Like the camera's very close to him. He has won the long walk. He gets the gun from, he asks for the gun from the major. It's like raining. And then fireworks are going off. And you're like, how are they setting off fireworks in the rain? But it's still happening. There's all these people cheering. He gets the gun. He shoots the major. The major falls to the ground. Like nothing happens. It has no effect on anything. And then everyone's just gone. And then McVries turns around and he sees the road continuing to stretch out ahead, limned by some orange streetlights. And he just keeps walking.
Yep.
I don't know what odds are this is like, shall we say, intentional, but if it is intentional, it irritates the shit out of me. did anything strike you as strange about those streetlights at the end?
I mean, they are big. They're like big orbular 1930s style.
Yeah.
Which are in that reference are Victorian style.
Mm-hmm.
So, but uniquely other than like, why are we in this 1930s polity? No. Or the CGI?
I think they might've been CGI, but the thing that struck me about them visually is that they have, triangular is not the right word, but, it's got three orbs, right? Three light bulbs on each one. In kind of like a circle around each other.
And all the ones on screen add up to 19.
Well, and they're orange. It's the design of the deadlights from the It movies.
Oh, yeah, it is this.
Yeah, right. And I don't know if that was intentional, but it felt intentional.
I want to give some credit to the director. I want, for the first time in a long time, I want to give credit to the people who made this movie. They don't pepper in a bunch of Stephen King shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think they did. I think it's just unintentional.
There's the thing that tilts me, and maybe it was intentional, is that there's one other little piece of Stephen King bullshit.
What's other Stephen King bullshit?
Well, how many years has it been since The Long Walk started?
Oh, it's been 19 years?
Yes.
Is that in the book, though?
No, that is in the movie.
All right. Maybe so. I'm going to read a little thing to you, Michael.
Okay.
Each year after the event, there's a spike in production. We have the means to return to our former glory. Our problem now is the epidemic of laziness. You boys are the answer. The long walk is the answer. When this is broadcast for all the states, your inspiration will continue to elevate our gross national product. We will be number one in the world again. That's Mark Hamill as the major.
Mm-hmm.
Saying the most thinly veneered.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, parody.
Yeah.
Is it parody? I don't even know what it is. Commentary. It's like, and I have to tell you, the long walk is just not up to the task of attempting to metaphorize. Not the long walk as a concept. The long mm-hmm. walk as a concept is actually very capacious, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it could represent anything. I think everything else in this movie is not up to the task of metaphorizing contemporary America. And I wonder, you know, let me give some credit. Some speculative credit. Maybe this is fiddling, you know?
Fiddling.
Maybe the script has the juice
mm-hmm.
and it got fucked over by the execs. The director has the cut, the director's cut. It's so political. We look at the camera, we say we're gonna get rid of the Supreme Court. We got pack the courts. They're looking at the camera. Pack the courts.
Yeah, the we did not mention
Puerto Rico's
this.
A state.
We did not mention this, but it does get to the point in the movie where the kids realize that they can like say whatever the fuck they want to the soldiers yeah. around them and say whatever because like, you know, what the fuck are they gonna shoot them? Like
yeah, there's a really cool one where someone says, if you're gonna you're paid to shoot me, not to look at me?
Yes.
Right. That's pretty fucking cool. That's good. Yeah.
So there would have been
some really good stuff too with that too around like, cause they're being filmed all the time cause it's broadcast on TV. By the way, aside, I'm speaking out of the corner of my mouth into the microphone. Why does no one ever talk about having watched The Long Walk before?
Yeah.
They talk about it as if it's a thing you read about in books, but no one talks about seeing it on TV. Anyway, but we get a really cool thing where we got like the tank, you know, like the long cannon, the long gun on a tank, mm-hmm. and it's just the you know, the camera going
yes.
around. That's good.
Yes, that
that's
is
like
good.
That's thoughtful stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
And so yeah, I think there would have been a great scene if we got the scenes where they're yelling. If they were like, "Yeah, pack the courts, statehood for Puerto Rico, pigs,
stay over Puerto Rico, DC's a state,
51 long walkers next year."
The major going to Congress every month or every year, doing his big press tour, trying to get additional states ratified in order to add more long walkers.
Yeah.
That's good. That's dystopia shit.
Oh, geez.
And again, it's just like little, there, any kind of grant, you know, texture to the world would be good. It's just a textureless, featureless planet.
Mm-hmm.
The thing where they go by the people who are straight up like Okies, you know
yes.
what I mean? They got the big truck piled up with all their shit, and they're like taking a break, you know, in the heat of the day. You're like, what's going on there? That's good.
Yeah.
Give me more of that. Presumably, they've been run off the road by the, you know, the long walk. There's
right.
a car on fire at
mm-hmm.
one point.
Mm-hmm. With a cop car behind it.
Yeah, give me more of that.
Yeah.
Have people talk about shit like that. Don't just be like, and you know yeah. what? Art's important.
Right.
That'll get us out of this. Art.
Yeah.
It won't.
But yeah, so I don't know. That's The Long Walk. A movie. I agree with you that I feel like I will hold out the possibility that there was fiddling because there's so much of this movie that feels like it had an idea for something, and then there's so much other stuff that feels completely unattached to that. Now, obviously, that's the way our minds can work all the time. So, you know, it could have been just human error. But it also does feel like multiple forces were pulling on this script and on this project in various ways.
Yeah. But ultimately, one person's name's on.
Yep.
So, I do really like this. So there's that. I'm looking at the IMDb quotes just to see mm-hmm. if there's anything to you know, because there is some great dialogue in the movie. So one is toward the end. And it's the major. This is the major. You're in the home stretch, for better or for worse. There's going to be wheat and there's going to be chaff. You choose, boys. Remember, you choose. And again, this is said in the most monotone, fucking like authoritarian voice possible. There's no vocal range going on with these Mark Hamill things. I don't know how to account for that. I do think part of what's going on with the Mark Hamill performance is he's doing a character voice. Mm-hmm. He's doing it, I think, in the way he would do in the booth.
Yes.
And so that doesn't communicate a lot of stuff. But this is what Garrity says. Shut the fuck up. Holy shit. Suck a dick, will you? I mean, just you fucking lotus eater, you old sack of shit. Shut up. That's funny. And then the major tells him to flex that sack and go get a prize.
Mm-hmm.
You fucking lotus eater, you old sack of shit. That's funny. He had to have just come up with that, right?
Yeah.
You old sack of shit.
Lotus eater. Like, calling him a lotus eater is so funny. They did. Yeah. His daddy taught him about the Odyssey.
That's right. There's that. There's a when Stebbins is like, he'll invite me in for tea. I was like, yeah. What the fuck is this? Get this shit out of this movie. Who's no one's ever invited for tea? You don't know what tea. It's the post-apocalypse, brother. You don't know what tea is. You don't know what sugar is, man. Markovich at one point says, my meemaw in the bowl in the morning.
And, oh, yeah.
And he gets hit with what the fuck is a meemaw?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. they don't got meemaws in the post-apocalypse.
They don't. Well, they do in one state. Yeah. One state has a meemaw. But not Olson. He doesn't have a meemaw. That's good.
Yeah.
They start calling each other the Four Musketeers and shit. And that sucks. That's where it's the most Stand By Me, you know, where you're like, all right.
Yeah. We're going to be friends forever.
What do you think about all the, as we round home on this episode, a lot of shitting in this movie.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. I was thinking
that's
about.
That's why I'm bringing it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's in my notes here.
You get to see it right there on the screen. I think about that one guy, that one actor who I'm, maybe he loved this idea, but I had this thought of like, spending the rest of one's life known as the guy who pooped in the middle of the road in the long walk.
And died. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I think that movies should not be afraid. I think it's fucked up that guy doesn't hang dong when he pees. You know what I mean?
Like, uh-huh.
I think this is a movie that should be so much more gross than it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some really up close, people get shot in the face. We get digital shit coming out of a butt. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, and that's gross. It's gross.
Yeah.
And like, I think you should lean in. I think this should have been a rated X for shit, piss, dicks, guts should have come out. You know what I mean? Like, I think that this could be so much worse than it is. And again, you could use it to lean into that Vietnam thing, right?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let us remake The Long Walk. I'll make it grosser and less marketable.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about, like, you know, the fact that we even get to see people shit on screen, which is just not a thing you see so often.
Digital poops. Did you see the digital poops?
I did see those digital poops. And I thought, this is actually good, right? This is this is what this story needs. Like, because we are moving from book to visual film, like, we need stuff that drives home how miserable the experience of the long walk is. And we can't afford to, like, flinch from that in the ways that movies usually do.
Yeah, because it's about the degradation of dignity.
Yes.
That's, like, one of the things going on, right? And,
yes.
Really and truly, there's nothing. Every human being has experienced this in some point in your life. There is nothing that is more shattering to your dignity than having to poop on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either being
they're so tiny,
with the notion of
you
like,
can't
uh-oh.
Hit them. <That's>,
and also not a, but the. There's only one.
Yeah.
One fly. But you know what I mean? There's like a thing of like, uh-oh, I need to find a restroom right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the flip side, I only have this restroom for 8 seconds.
Mm-hmm. And I've got more than 8 seconds of work to do.
That's right. I've got to change my life right now. Every human being's experienced that. And it's like an absolute blow to your dignity as a human being. You're just an animal in that moment. And that is why, like, on one hand, I take your point, which is like, yeah, now you're known as the guy who pooped and died on TV. I'm going to take my mom to the movie I was in. I poop and die. That's bad. You know, you don't want to have to be in that.
You supported me through my dreams as an actor, Mom.
That's right. I went to Juilliard and then the NYU film school and I pooped and died. You know, like, that's not. But also on the flip side, who among us is not pooped and died? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all of us on our death will be pooping and dying. And digital poop, no less. And, but like, it's what gives it the movie some character, right? Like that, it is like you're saying, it is the thing that kind of brings into this visual realm the how miserable it is. And we see that a couple times too, with like when Garrity's shoe blows out, you know, and he's got to take his shoes off and his feet are just, they're just blood, you know, and everyone's feet are presumably just blood and they're just walking through it. The kid whose leg is broken, you know, there are these moments of just profound suffering. And the movie hits you over and over again with the idea that they're suffering for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they know it too. Like the world's not going to get better
just
because they do this. And at the very end, just because he shoots the major, the world's not going to get better.
Right.
Probably won't get worse though. How good it. So, there's a misery in the book that, in between the monologues, you can squint your eyes and you can see in the film. And I appreciate probably, a good 20, 30 minutes in this movie, I think is just really high quality stuff. But then I got to watch the other 50 minutes, not even that long. I hope there's a director's cut one day.
That'd be interesting. We can hope, put our fingers together.
I think he's too busy.
Like E.T. Hunger and Games. Elliot. What?
I think he's too busy making Hunger Games.
Yeah, he did this. And then he was like, got to go back for more Hunger Games.
I've got to go back for more Hunger Games. I need money. What's this David Johnson guy in next? I need to know.
Oh, yeah. Let's find out.
Nothing. Upcoming. He's got four things upcoming. On IMDb, so who knows? They're saying there's an Alien Romulus too. I don't think that's going to happen.
God, what a disappointing film.
I like Alien Romulus a lot. I know you're negative on it. I liked it a lot. I liked even like the weird rerun parts of other movies, which all of the movies do.
What I would say about Alien Romulus actually is I think Alien Romulus would be a very, very, very good movie if they did not do the one shitty thing that they famously did.
Yeah.
That's the thing that makes me sad is like even the stuff that I think a lot of other people like, I know people had big feelings about what they did with Prometheus lore in that movie. Mm-hmm. I was fucking there for that. Like,
yeah, me too.
Like,
I thought it was great. Yeah, where they're like watching video footage from Prometheus.
Yes.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
No, I talked to our good friend, Stephen Kearse, you know, film and book critic and author himself. Liquid Snakes author, Stephen Kearse, and he hated it. And I was just trying to pull it. Stephen and I, you know, we have the most oppositional views of film that humanly possible. We so rarely agree. And I just couldn't for the life of me figure out what he didn't like. You know what I mean? Like despite the fact that he just held up that he hated it. But yeah, I think that I have to bracket in my head the one big problem with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's hard. That is hard to do, but I can do it. I can bracket anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good phenomenologist. I can bracket anything on Earth.
Yeah.
Doing that, I just think, I think some of the other parts are really great. I also really like the lead actress.
Yeah.
And I think that she's a really good inheritor to the, you know, the women of the Alien franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my thought in that movie basically was so the thing that it did, in case somehow you didn't hear about this, is they use like the digital technology to quote unquote resurrect Ian Holm for his character, like to bring back his character from the original Alien film and all this weird stuff. And it just, it is egregious because it is such a thing. Like, you could have done actually the exact same thing without doing the weird gross we're animating an actor who has passed away kind of thing that they did. And it just, because otherwise I feel like that would be like a top three Alien film to me, just in terms of like what that thing does.
Yeah. Well, when are we going to do our bonus behind the paywall only Alien series?
I don't know. We should though.
We should just do it.
Yeah.
Chauncey's ready to watch the Alien franchise.
Already watched, actually.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So we're good
that
to go.
That was what I was doing in the first month after birth, was I watched all of the Alien movies and then the Predator movies.
You gotta get baby Chauncey getting Clockwork Oranged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make some real good first impressions on the old frontal cortex. It can't all be real estate deals.
That's right. Know?
All right, Michael, what are we doing next? What's happening next month here on the bonus episodes, Range Touch? Thanks to everybody, by the way, for supporting us here on patreon.com/RangeTouch. We can only do it because you give us money to do it.
Ooh. Next month, we will be talking about the second season of Mr. Mercedes, which is not based on the book Mr. Mercedes, nor is it based on the book Finders Keepers that we will be reading, but is based on the third Bill Hodges book, End of Watch, which we'll read later, but for some reason, it's the second season of the TV show. So that's what we're talking about. Hopefully that won't be too confusing. At the very least, it'll be interesting for us to guess what the third book actually is like based on watching an adaptation of it.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm most interested in, is is when I watch the show first and then read the book, how flabbergasted will I be? Will I be looking for the turtle the whole time?
Yes, right. God, the Bill Hodges trilogy ends with him becoming the new turtle. He puts on the shell and assumes the turtle's stately place.
The turtle.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that episode of, or not the episode, but the issue of Uzumaki where they turn into snails. Just slowly over the whole season, he slowly morphs into a turtle.
Holly and Jerome are like, I think Bill's turning into a turtle.
What's wrong with him? He just loves, he keeps asking us to heave lettuce at him, hit him in the head with it.
He's look at how he's nibbling that strawberry so delicately.
That's right. I got to get this on Instagram. All right. Speaking of Instagram, you can follow us on Instagram at Ranged Touch. I will be, when's this coming out? I will be at Adepticon at the end of this month. Not to date this too much, but this will come out in March. So I'll be at Adepticon at the end of this month. If you're at Adepticon, I don't know. We'll probably have an event. We'll probably have like a meetup one day. I'll make some plans before that. So keep an eye on for that. You can find us on Blue Sky at Range Touch. It's where we're mostly doing our stuff. And on TikTok, where we oscillate wildly between extremely viral clips where people in the comments explain very basic information to us. And then being shadow banned by TikTok for all kinds of stuff.
See? Yep. They love to do that.
Yeah, it's basically our two modes over there. So you can follow us on TikTok, see what we're up to. We mostly just share stuff like this. And then we'll probably have a new podcast coming soon. Next couple months.
Yep.
Be fun.
The Baby Chauncey Show.
The Baby Chauncey.
Title to be decided.
Title to be decided about Baby Chauncey. All right, Michael. How do we leave?
We leave because it's late in the day and we got to do it for Steve.